Blog Talk Radio.
Da 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 da. I was meant to fly. Oh, 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 oh. I was living for today, not caring about tomorrow.
Oh.
Living off what people say and giving all the power to the things that were only gonna bring me to my knees. I saw people turn their backs and leave me. And on that very day, I started believing that in the mirror was the only friend that I would ever need.
For more information about the show, how to be a guest, or to let us know what you think, visit us at www.hyhradio.com. My guest today, Chuck Adams, knows that it is okay to be different. It's okay to dream, and it is okay to want something more in life. Chuck was born with a severed spinal cord and paralyzed from the waist down. Chuck joins us today to share his story. Welcome.
I'm delighted to be with you today.
Thank you for joining us, and I'm really looking forward to this interview.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You often use the phrase, and I'm going to just jump right into it.
Sure, go ahead.
You often use the phrase, I was born in a wheelchair. For those who have never met you, and I'll say yet.
Okay, I like that.
What does this mean?
Well, I've been paralyzed my whole life. Back 53 years ago, they probably should have done one more cesarean that day. It was a breech birth, and the doctor did the level best that he could, but I ended up paralyzed from the waist down. So I've always been disabled. I say that I was born in a wheelchair, but this is normal and natural for me. There was no adjustment. It wasn't like somebody who could have walked and then was injured or paralyzed later in life. This has always been natural for me. This is, you know, part of what makes me up. I mean, being in a wheelchair isn't who I am. It's just one of the characteristics that make up all of our personality. But, you know, I was really blessed, Yvonne, that my mom and dad, right from the very beginning, have always encouraged me to try. They've always pushed the boundaries, and right from the beginning, from a school standpoint, I went to public school, my whole life, my academic years, and when I was going to register for kindergarten, I live in Matatuck, in Long Island, in New York, and when they were registering me for kindergarten, the principal wasn't sure whether they could handle a youngster in a wheelchair and make that kind of commitment to go from kindergarten right through 12th grade. And what he decided was he was going to have the school nurse, a wonderful lady named Hope Burt, actually came to our house here to have lunch with Mom and Dad and myself. And, you know, here I'm 4 and a half, almost 5, and, you know, we're having lunch that day, and we talked at the table. And about three-quarters of the way through, I asked, Nurse Hope if she'd like to see my bedroom, like to see the toys and the sports things that I had in my bedroom. And I kind of backed away from the table, and I started to push myself. And she says, let me push you. And I turned around, and I remember this 48 years later, of when I turned around and I said to her, no, I can do it. I'm a big boy. And that kind of set the tone to her right from the beginning, that even though I was in a chair, you know, I was still independent. I was still going to do things for myself.
Right.
And my whole high school, you know, my undergraduate and high school career was like that. I mean, I was in high school plays where I played the king. I mean, the wheelchair made a splendid throne. It kind of was a natural, you know, to play on stage. And I was the scorekeeper and manager for the, you know, for the high school sports teams. You know, in every respect, I tried to be one of the guys, and I was one of the guys.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, in college was kind of an extension of that. I went to Hofstra University, and I majored in marketing and public relations, and I was the captain of the wheelchair basketball team there, and we traveled everywhere from Canada down to Virginia to play in tournaments and championship games and things like that. And, you know, so from the very beginning, you know, I pushed the envelope, I pushed the boundaries, and, you know, that wouldn't have been the case if Mom and Dad, you know, didn't set that tone, and they always encouraged me to try. And, you know, if I kind of skinned my knees a little bit, they, you know, they were there to help me get up again. And you know, we tried to learn from that experience on what does it take to be able to be successful at that particular thing. And really that's kind of been one of my mottos in life, is I've never wanted to look back and wished I've tried something, whether it was in business, whether it was in romance, whether it's this journalistic venture that I'm trying to do right now. You know, I've always felt that that it's okay to dream, but you've got to work real hard to give it the best shot to make it happen.
Wow. Which brings me to my next question. I want to ask about your professional background, but first I wanted to ask, you mentioned that you were into sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I wanted to ask.
Sure.
Sports is something that you've always been passionate about.
Always. I mean, when I was 6 or 7 years old, Dad put a basketball pole up and backboard up in the backyard that was maybe 8 feet high so that I could reach shooting it. And, you know, as I grew older, it's the normal 10 feet now. And he taught me how to shoot a bang shot. And sports was something, you know, and whether it's with a youngster with a challenge growing up or whether it's with our men and women overseas in the war who are coming home with physical challenges now, sports is one of those great equalizers that when you're in a competition like that, the wheelchair or whatever other mechanism you have is seamless. It's not noticeable. It is people competing. And it's not whether you're standing up or you're sitting down or, you know, we've got a runner right now trying out for the Olympics who's got a prosthesis, you know, on one of his legs, and there's been some debate on whether that's an advantage or disadvantage, you know, but I think athletics has always been something that, you know, you don't have labels. You just go and play.
Right.
You participate. And the sports has been a huge part of my life, both when I played wheelchair basketball. I play tennis, wheelchair tennis now. I've got two teenage daughters. Well, actually, you know, a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old daughter, and we play tennis with each other. And so, you know, it's a wonderful way, A, to stay in shape, and it's also very fun recreationally to be out there and socially play the game as well.
Right. And which brings me to what your professional background.
Absolutely. From college, I went to I was a savings banker for about 12 years. I was a vice president of marketing and public relations, first for Riverhead Savings Bank, and then eventually for Teachers Federal Credit Union out here, and involved with a number of events, both in the advertising side, but also public relations-wise. We spearheaded some events that had not been done on the east end of Long Island before. We brought the Duke Ellington Orchestra and Lionel Hampton and Dizzy Gillespie out to Riverhead. We had a 2,000-seat tent, and we brought these acts to the east end of Long Island where they hadn't performed before. We've done book signings. One of the things I do now is I'm a corporate rep for BJ's Wholesale Club. You might have heard of Costco and Sam's Club. BJ's Wholesale Club is a chain from Maine to Florida, a wholesale club from Maine to Florida. And we're in Georgia. We've got 4 or 5 locations in Georgia. But what I do for them is, or one of the things I did for them, was that we would, again, do events to try to heighten the traffic in our particular stores. We've done book signings with people like Deborah Norville and Emeril and Tom Brokaw, Mary Higgins Clark. So I've been involved in a number of special events along the way. You know, people have been so wonderful to me growing up, and, you know, every disability is different. So you talk to different people to find out, all right, how did you do this? How did you do this? And you try to pick and choose and learn for what works for your own situation.
Right.
But people have been so wonderful and giving and gracious that a lot of what I've done corporately has been to try to give back to the community. And whether it was the jazz festivals or bringing some celebrities or authors to an area that may not have been there before, giving back has been a large part of what I've tried to do.
Wow. And you also, if I'm not mistaken, do sports casting?
I do. Journalism is part of what I've done for a very long time. Ever since college, I've written for weekly community papers here covering local high school and college sports. And on a weekly, I do that every week, and then I also do a cable TV show. It's called the Hot Stove League Plus. Ed Zabrowski is the host, and I'm the frequent guest on that show. And, again, we spotlight local athletes. We talk about some of the local professional teams, and I've done that right throughout. I mean, again, that's been my way of being part of many of these things. And then as an extension of that, you know, I started writing the book, which we'll get into in a couple of minutes. I mean, I started writing that book 26 years ago and never touched it for about 22 years and then came back to it. But journalism and writing and broadcasting has been a big part of my background. And again, it was one of those things when I looked at, you look at your skill sets and you look at what you can do. You know, there's things that being in a wheelchair is more difficult to do or to overcome than other things, but I certainly learned that I could interview people. I certainly learned that I could write a story about those people, you know, and whether it was the celebrities we talked about, whether it was professional athletes, you know, like Carl Yastrzemski or politicians, it's something that you know, I've kind of got an inquisitive mind and like to ask the questions that most people would want to know from these people. But I think you can do it in a way that relaxes them, and you know, you have a free-flowing discussion. And again, it's all trying to give back to a community that's been wonderful to me.
I'm 36.
Okay.
And in my lifetime, if I could have got a nickel for every time I heard someone say I can't, I would probably be very rich right now.
Mm-hmm.
I often tell my son that I want him to remove that from his vocabulary because I believe that by saying that you can't do something, whatever it is, you limit yourself to even give it a try. And I've known you for a short period of time, probably, 2 years now?
Mm-hmm.
And you have such a positive energy. And I wanted to ask, what is your perception on life?
And absolutely. And again, the tone was set by my folks, you know, being encouraging, always encouraging me to try. You know, it's funny. I had one of those moments happen a couple of years ago that actually changed my perception completely. For the first 48 years of my life, I didn't want being in a wheelchair to be any different for me than any other characteristic of a person. To me, I was no different than anyone else. Whether it was a height or glasses or a wheelchair or any other characteristic, I wasn't a wheelchair. That was part of what makes me up, but I'm not a wheelchair.
Right.
So I never wanted to be different than anyone else. But then I went through a series of events back 4 or 5 years ago where at a time when I was going through a divorce and some change in my life, I had a couple of things happen that the confluence of them, and the first one was there was a professor in Freeport who was injured in a diving accident, and he was retired from his profession and he had no insurance at this point, and he was severely paralyzed. And I had a call from a nurse who was helping him that was trying to do a fundraiser, and she called me to ask if my organization could donate some raffle prizes for their fundraiser. And I said, yeah, sure, and I, you know, sent the request on to my gal who would facilitate that. And I'm lying in bed that night and I'm thinking, well, if he needs to raise $30,000 or $40,000, you know, this has got to be a heck of a raffle to do that. So the next morning when I'm driving into work, I picked up the phone and I called her and said, hey, I'll give you those prizes, but tell me more what you're trying to do. And when I fully understood the scope of what they needed to do, and for him to be able to come home, they needed to renovate his house so that it was accessible, so there were ramps, so that the bathroom was accessible, so that the kitchen was accessible. And, I mean, it truly was going to cost $30,000 or $40,000 to do that. And when I said, well, have you talked, part of being involved with BJ's Wholesale Club is when we open up a new store, I'm kind of the first guy who goes into the community and gets to know the people there, whether it's the politicians or some of the leaders of the town. So I had coincidentally spent a great deal of time in Freeport right before this happened. And I asked this nurse, you know, have you talked to Mayor Glacken? Have you talked to this person or that person? Maybe they can help cut through some of the red tape that was slowing up getting some, you know, some assistance that they were looking for. So we had that meeting, and within a month, this gentleman was able to get the grants and the assistance that he needed that would allow him to come back home and live life as independently as he possibly could.
Wow.
On the heels of that, Yvonne, one of the things I've always done is I've spoken at high schools during, like, their handicap awareness days. And I was actually in Manhattan at a school for the disabled called the Mickey Mantle School for the Disabled. And they've got this is a middle school where they've got children with various challenges, some of them physical, some of them emotional, some of them from broken homes where it's had a deep psychological impact on these kids. And when I wheeled in there that day to spend the day with them, and what I like to do when I do that is not only will I speak at an assembly, but I prefer going to each classroom where I could sit down with the children and have 15 or 20 of them sit around in a semicircle in front of me. And we can just talk. Rather than me lecturing from a stage, we can sit down and the youngsters can ask me whatever they want to ask me. No matter how simple it is or how complicated it is, you know, we can chat. And when I went there that day, these kids looked at me immediately like I was one of them. And you know what? I was one of them.
Right.
And it struck me for the first time. I'm 48 now. It struck me for the first time that it's okay to be different. And as I was going to leave that day, one of the classes wrote me little notes telling me what it meant for me to come to their class. And I got a note from this youngster who said that for the first time in his life, he felt it was okay for him to be different. And it had an extraordinary impact on me. And as I say, the confluence between the changes in my personal life, helping the gentleman in Freeport, you know, having this youngster, you know, touch me the way he did with his note, it really changed my philosophy of I'm no different than anybody else.
Right.
But now I was comfortable in my own skin. It took 48 years for me to grow into my own skin to say, you know what, it's okay to be different. And it was one of those seminal moments that I think, you know, has changed my life forever.
Wow. You wrote a book called Something More.
Yes.
What is the book about?
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of a cross between Ironside, and many people will probably remember Raymond Burr played a character called Ironside back in the 70s. He was a detective in San Francisco who was shot in the line of duty and then solved crimes from his wheelchair. So this is kind of a cross between Ironside and a Nicholas Sparks romance adventure. And the reason it's that is that Ironside had a real impact on me when I was growing up. I mean, you know, my mom had told me that President Roosevelt ran the war from the wheelchair, and I watched Ironside solve mysteries from the wheelchair, and he used the line, you know, I don't need my legs to catch the bad guys. And I watched Raymond Burr play that character. But the one thing that bothered me when I watched that, and I was probably 15 at the time, was that I thought that the character was too one-dimensional, that I knew how active I was as a teenager. But all that show depicted Ironside doing was solving crimes, and he came back and he lived in a garage that was turned into an apartment in the police headquarters. And I wondered, where was his wife? Where was his family? Where was the things that I was experiencing in life being shown on TV?
Right.
And it wasn't there back in the 70s. And obviously, you know, the society has evolved a lot in the accessibility for people with challenges over the last three decades. So part of the story was born back then in the mid-70s, Yvonne, where I knew there was something about the Ironside character that I would do different someday. I then, when I was in college, I then was blessed with meeting a very special lady who, even though she and I were not meant to be together, she showed me what something more could mean in my life. And the combination of, you know, being touched romantically with knowing that I wanted to someday try to create the next Ironside for this generation led me to the beginning of writing Something More. And I wrote the first three chapters of Something More in the summer of 1979. And it kind of was maybe a very cathartic way that I was pouring out a grieving, broken, romantic heart onto the paper to kind of work through that situation. but it was also the genesis of the birth of the two main characters in Something More, Bobby Sanders, who was kind of based on me, and Kimberly Wells, kind of based on the young woman who showed me what Something More could be. And I wrote the first three chapters of that book, and then for 24 years, I never touched the story. I got married twice to two wonderful women, didn't end up working out, but I've got two terrific daughters, I've got two stepsons. You know, we did things in life that I never imagined possible, but as I went through, again, a transition back in 2003, I came back to Mom and Dad's, and I found, just by happenstance, those first three chapters that I had written in my old bedroom closet. And when I looked at them that day, I was remembering huge chunks of dialogue almost verbatim, like the 24 years had never existed. And I sat down about 2 weeks later, now at a laptop. Back 26 years earlier, I had handwritten them. Now I'm sitting down at a laptop, and it took me about 8 months, but I finished Bobby and Kim's romantic journey. And really what the story is it's a story of hope and determination and faith and true love, where Bobby and Kim meet each other when they have graduated from college, and they're both going through a very difficult time in both of their lives. And they meet each other by happenstance on a cruise. And for 7 days on that cruise, they find each other, and you know, they fall in love with each other. But at the end of that cruise, Kim's character, Kim was engaged to be married to a gentleman named Michael Johnson. Kim decides that she's going to go ahead with that wedding, that she had too much invested both in the preparation and also in what Michael's family had meant to her, that she was torn. Does she walk away from that for a 7-day fling, perhaps, or does she go through with that? And Kim goes through with that marriage, and there's a section of the book where Bobby is heartbroken. I mean, here he's devastated. He's fallen head over heels in love with this woman, and Kim goes through some difficult times, you know, in her marriage with Michael. But as the story goes on, they end up finding each other again at a time when Kim is going through a great tragedy in her life. And life things happen in life for very, you know, mystical and magical reasons, and sometimes the Lord works in very mysterious ways. But the two of them come back together, and they're together when she needs him the most in her life. And it really is a story, though, of, you know, of determination and hope and faith and true love and the power of true love. And I have excerpts of the story on a website that I have that I know we'll talk about in a little bit. But, you know, it's one of those things that I try to write it in a way, Yvonne, that whether you've got a challenge in your life or not, anyone at certain points in their life wants something more.
Yeah.
Whether it's a mom or dad to hug, whether it's a materialistic thing, whether it's a partner, we all go through different stages where, you know, we say, darn it, I wish I could have this. And it's one of those stories that I've tried to resonate in a way that, write in a way that whether you've been touched by a challenge in your family or just something you want, I hope it will appeal to people across the walks of life.
Which brings me to ask, what is your mission for the book?
Well, I really want this to be, you know, I'm about 4 years into the process now, and we've made progress as far as exposure of what we're trying to do. I mean, the difficult thing is this story is different. This isn't a story that Hollywood or the publishing industry is necessarily looking for, but I think that's also one of the powers of this, is that it's different than most stories that are out there. I would like this to be a mainstream story. If I were to self-publish 500 copies of this book, I don't feel that I'm going to fulfill what I'm trying to do. I write every week for a local paper. I don't need to see my words in print to feel that I've accomplished this project. This is something that I would like to leave behind, hopefully as an inspiration, whether it's for the 10-year-old little Chucky who doesn't know what Something More could be, or the 48-year-old person who's in a midlife crisis that they know their life doesn't work, but they're afraid to take a chance to reach for something more. And I hope that this can be an inspiration for them to take that leap of faith and to try to reach for something more. So initially I've written it as a novel, and we've talked to many publishing houses to try to publish it, but I've also written a screenplay version of this so that whether it be as a movie or as a television show, and I actually pitched it to one of the networks as a pilot last year, and while it didn't get picked up this time, I think you can tell by my passion, my perseverance is not going to be dimmed by a few no's.
Right.
But it is something that I would like to leave behind, you know, as an inspiration for other people.
Since then, you've written two more books. Are these more like a series?
They are. I mean, I would like Bobby Sanders to be an enduring character, a recurring character. So Something Else is the name of the second book. And while Something More really revolves around, you know, Bobby and Kim and their life and their journey and how they end up back together, Something Else, and the third story in the installment is called Murder in the Cove. I was kind of playing that something to death, and I figured I better not go with the third something title. But the third one, I'm very big into boating. I mean, being in the wheelchair has not stopped me from doing many things. I mean, I sit in the third row at Phantom of the Opera. I go boating with my family. I mean, it you know, you're only as limited, as you say, as the limitations you put on yourself.
Right.
But I see this as a series, whether it's a series of books or a television series or a series of movies. I think this could be one of those kind of recurring characters that, you know, hopefully will be around for a long time.
I can see that. And I've also read the book, and I think that that those who have said no
mm-hmm.
are going to one day wish that they had been the first one to grab a hold of it.
You know, it's funny, Yvonne, I've saved every no that I've ever gotten, and I've gotten more than one. And someday when I get that one yes, I'm going to put a collage together with all the no's with the one yes in the middle of it, and that is going to be proudly displayed over my fireplace someday, because all it takes is one. I've never done this before. I'm looking for somebody maybe who's in the industry that will share the vision of what I'm trying to do. I'm open-minded to the idea of having a co-author or having a
right.
collaboration of the project. I mean, in business, I build teams. And when you're successful, glory goes to everyone, all right? They say, you know, failure is an orphan, success has a million fathers. I would like to see this project come to fruition. And if I need to bring in somebody who is more experienced in the industry who can help me get across the finish line, I'm absolutely open-minded to doing that. This is something that, you know, you kind of wonder in life why you were given the challenge you were given. I think 53 years has brought me to this moment where there's probably 50 people who could write a story like this, but I'm one of them. And I'm looking for, you know, that person that will share the vision and help us get across the finish line.
If there are listeners who are afraid to reach for something more, whether they're disabled or not, what would you say to them?
Well, you know, I would say this. I would say that, look, we've all got to assess what our own capabilities are. And as we talked about earlier, every challenge is different.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's in the same category, we're all individuals, we're all different. But I think what you do is you look at what you can do, and you need to believe in yourself, and you need to work hard. And you need to, when you fall down and skin your knee, you need to pick yourself back up and learn from it and try again. But I think if you believe in it, if you have faith that what you're trying to do, it will happen when the time is right. I don't think there's many mountains that can't be moved. Now, do I get impatient sometimes that would I have liked this to happen 3 years ago rather than, you know, still not having happened right now? Sure. I'm human like everybody else. But I truly believe, other than my unconditional love for my two daughters, I have never believed in something more than Something More. And I truly believe someday, Yvonne, that we're going to be back. I'm going to be back on the show with you, and we're going to be talking about when the movie opens or whether the version of this as a Broadway play opens. I truly believe someday we're going to get to that point.
I believe that, too. And I really commend you for pushing and not giving up. I think a lot of people, and I've been guilty of it myself, you kind of, if things don't happen exactly when you want them to, you kind of assume that it's not meant to happen, or you kind of assume that, okay, you know, it's easy to be discouraged. But I commend you for having, it took me a long time to get to the point where I have stuck in my head that it's not much I can't do and that I'm going to give it my all and I'm not going to walk away from it. And I really commend you for what you're doing with Something More and Something Else and Murder in the Cold. And I know that you will be back on to talk about the upcoming film, the release date, or the book signing. How can people find out more information about you and your upcoming projects?
Absolutely. I've started a website back last September. I started a website called BobbySanders.com. All right, BobbySanders.com. And on the website, I've got a little bit about my background, a little bit about different things that have touched my life and some of my experiences. I've got excerpts of the book. I've also got a section where I started a blog where I want it to be interactive because I hope that someday people will reach out to me and we can start a dialogue. And I've got two questions on the blog right now. One of them is, if you could have something more in life, what would that be? And the second question is, if you've achieved your something more in life, what was the key to achieving that? And I hope that someday as the website, you know, gets widespread attention and we start to get some interaction, you know, it's going to kind of be like an information gathering place that people who've got various challenges, you know, can go to share some thoughts and some ideas on what they're trying to do and maybe how other people have achieved it. But I also have one. I just want to touch real quick on another topic. We talked about, you know, reaching for things. I talked about how one of the book signings I did, Deborah Norville, was at one of the book signings, and she and I have kind of forged a friendship over the last 7 or 8 years. And she just came out with a new book last October called Thank You Power. It's about the power of gratitude. And she's got about 10 or 12 different people who've had challenges in their life and how they've either overcome them or how they're reaching for something more in their own life. And, you know, Deborah, bless her, you know, has me spotlighted as one of those people. And I'm forever grateful for her support and her encouragement. But I think the core of what she's saying is so important in life, that to be thankful for what we have. I do in business, I'm involved with many different groups. And you know what, there's not a day go by that I'm not thankful that I've got what I have. That my folks always taught me there's somebody less fortunate to be thankful for what God has blessed you with. And I think if you start with the basic, you know, intrinsic value of I'm thankful for what I have, that it changes your whole mindset how you look at life. That rather than looking at the glass as half empty, you do look at it as half full, and that you're trying to even fill the glass up further than that. But I think Deborah's book illustrates with a number of people, you know, how those challenges have been overcome. And I do have a spot on my website that talks about her book, Thank You Power, and you know, what she's meant to me and in the process of what I'm trying to do. And as I say, I am grateful for her support and encouragement. But somebody can go to BobbySanders.com if they'd like to contact me directly. There are phone numbers. There is an email address where they can reach out. And as I say, people have been so wonderful to me across the years that I would be delighted to talk with them in whatever capacity and help them reach for their own something more.
Wow. It was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. And I wish I could have had you on sooner. you truly inspire me. And I wish you much success. Thank you.
Well, Yvonne, you've done a wonderful job, and I know you know we're all trying to make a difference in this world, and I think you've done a wonderful job as well. And whenever I can help you, you know I'm here for you.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure.
All right, bye bye.
Take care.
For more information about Chuck Adams, visit www.BobbySanders.com. I want to thank the listeners for tuning in to the Yvonne Pierre Show on HYH Radio. For more information about the show, how to be a guest, or to let us know what you think, visit www.hyhradio.com. Thank you.
No matter who pushes me, I know I'm not gonna let you. I'm not gonna let you get me down. No, no, no. I was meant to fly over hills and mountains, over lakes and valleys. I was meant to fly.
I was meant to fly.